Okay, so, yeah, I'm Daniel, hi. I would like to ask about something that was, although not included in your slides, it's an LHCb result that I find very interesting. So there is a recent paper, as far as I know, about the discovery of a double charm tetraquark, which is, as far as I understand, it's supposed to be even more interesting for some reason than the previous tetraquark discoveries. Could you tell us something about this?
Not the details. This is not something that I've covered in my presentation. What I can say is that there have been some 62 new states discovered at the LHC. And about 50 of them have been discovered by LHCb. So LHCb has turned out to be a fantastic apparatus to look for exotic states. And so there have been, so meaning exotic states, meaning stuff that is not, you know, the normal mesons or the baryons. So it can be tetraquark, or it can be pentaquarks that have also been found at LHCb. And this has generated a lot of theoretical interest, and people are trying to understand what keeps these states together. And there are, you know, several ideas and several schools of thought. So for example, are these tetraquark loosely bound? Do you have two mesons that are loosely bound, or do you have an object which is tightly bound together? And I think there have been several models put forward to understand all this zoology of states that have been discovered by LHCb.
Thank you.
Yes. Other questions?
Yeah, this is Burns. For the B flavor anomalies,
yes.
Can you comment a bit on the expected sensitivities with the high luminosity LHC phase and how it compares to other experiments like Bell 2?
Okay. Let me go to the summary table that I've shown. So, am I moving the slides? No. Okay, so the first thing that has to happen to try to clarify this picture is that this analysis must be completed. So LHCb has an integrated luminosity of 9 inverse femtobar. This is much smaller than ATLAS and CMS because we operate on a different, with a different regime. So small luminosity to be able to reconstruct all primary and secondary vertices and all the decay chain. So the first question that one must answer is this, and to complete the analysis of B to K star LL in these two Q square ranges. This is an activity that is close to completion. And the same analysis is also looking at the B plus K plus LL, so repeating the analysis that has already been performed on the entire data set, but in a bigger, in two Q square intervals and with a bigger sensitivity. So this, the completion of this analysis should clarify, well, or should add, you know, very relevant information to the status of this anomaly, so the anomaly in the loops, a BSLL type of anomaly. Then, of course, depending, and if I may add, and this second analysis is working, is utilizing a working point, for example, in terms of particle ID, which is different from the previous one. So it's a truly independent analysis. And the idea being that given that nobody else can do this analysis at the moment, and this is, would be a very significant result, and we would like to cross-check it ourselves. So this is the attitude. And so I think the outcome of that should come very soon. I hinted at the fact that Bell 2 will also be in a position to perform this measurement very well, and also with the advantage that their electron channel is in the ballpark of the muon channel. They are operating at a D plus E minus machine, so they had lighter detectors, and so they measure electrons better than we do at the Hadron machine. And you know, this is a big advantage. Then. I also mentioned an anomaly which occurs in three-level decays, which is very intriguing because in three-level, the possibilities of new physics are more limited, but there are possibilities of new physics, and so there are models based on leptoquarks, for example, that people have used to explain this. And here, LHCb will soon come out, hopefully, with a measurement of RD star versus RD. So there will be a new ellipse appearing in this graph from LHCb. So this should help clarify this picture. Interesting to note that the experiment which is deviating the most is Babar, but this is a very old measurement, you know, from Babar. And Babar will deliver another precise measurement of RD star and RD after a decade. So, of course, much more data-driven. So this has been announced, and it will be interesting to see what they get, even if experiments that come out with a result 10 years after the end of data-taking, the scrutiny is maybe less good. So these are the plans. But these measurements are going to continue also with the upgrade. But of course, it will take a while before they are completed. And I wanted to show you the result. Oops, sorry. And here you see that the measurement is statistically limited. It's not systematically limited. So even for the other decay that I talked about, which is the BS to mu mu, even that measurement is statistically limited. So before you hit the systematic uncertainty, it will take a while. Yes?
This is Nissan from University of Hamburg. I have two questions. The first is, what exactly is the status today? Is there any extension for the standard model that can explain all the CP violation that we see, or we need some cosmological additions?
No, the standard model as we see it lacks CP violation by at least 10 orders of magnitude.
So no, I meant, is there any extension to the standard model that can explain, or we need cosmology for that?
Well, then it's not the standard model anymore. So I'm sure there are models that can explain SCP violation. I see that. Maybe you reply.
We certainly don't lack models.
Fantasy, exactly.
Models, yeah. to explain CP violation, to have the right amount. The point is to find the models that can lead also to some other possible hints of new physics to be checked independently. So to construct models with CP violation, which is large, is not a problem. In fact, generally, it is the opposite. Namely, when you construct a model with new physics at the TV scale, the real danger is that you have too much CP violation, and we have to limit it. Consider, for instance, supersymmetric extensions of a standard model.
Thank you. And my second question is on slide 20. Yes, 20 or 21. So I do analysis for CMS, slide 20, sorry. And we don't have in CMS any plots where we see progression over time. And it seems like LHCb, you have a lot of observations that the parameter is time, and I was just wondering, how do you exactly measure things over time in the LHCb detector?
Well, you measure the decay length. You have a very precise measurement of the decay length. And this gives you the information that you need. And in this case, what drives the precision is this excellent time resolution, which is a consequence of the precision on the decay length measurement in the end. And this we can do because we have a vertex detector which is very close to the beam. This is the first requirement. Then you want to have little material as far as possible, so the amount of material that you have in the between the first and second point where you perform your measurement, this also drives the precision. But in the end, I mean, it's the precision on your decay length that drives the precision on the measurements, in addition to these other things that I've described. So the tagging, for example, the tagging is also crucial for this type of measurement, obviously.
Thank you.
So hi, this is Nicola Rubini. I actually have two questions. So it seems like all the processes you describe depend on loop diagrams, since they are not suppressed. But you have only shown on-loop diagrams. What will the effect be of adding extra loops? And are these effects negligible when compared to experiment?
Well, first of all, it's not true, because the last anomaly that I described is a three-level anomaly, so which is what makes it really intriguing. So the so-called RD and RD star, this is three-level anomalies. And so what were you saying about the
so
loops?
So basically, adding extra loops, is it negligible?
Well, I mean, the calculations have the precision that they have. So, experimentally, what we only care about is the precision of the calculation, which includes, presumably, extra loops if they're relevant. So we are comparing to a prediction, for example, to BS, in the case of BS to mu, where the dominating diagram are the single loop that I have drawn. Those are the dominating diagrams. And I think that probably the presence of extra loops is small compared to, I don't know, the effect of radiative corrections or things like that. But one would have to ask the theorists who have made the calculation. But in the end, for us, what matters is the precision with which those processes are calculated, and this is extremely accurate, as you have seen.
Okay. So, and the second question is: you mentioned earlier that you're running on low luminosity with respect
yes.
to other experiments. What's yes. the limiting factor for you?
So we ran so far with a luminosity of 4 in 10 to the 32 per centimeter squared per second, compared to a luminosity of Atlas CMS of 10 to the 34. So we run in a completely different regime, and the way in which this is done is that the beams are slightly displaced, so that you reduce the luminosity of the collision. And I thought I had a slide, but okay, it doesn't matter. So, and the advantage of running at this luminosity is that you have no pileup. So instead of having a pileup of 40 or something like that, in the case of Atlas and CMS, which makes the reconstruction of the decay chain extremely complex, we had essentially a pileup of one. And that has the advantage that you can, you know, nicely reconstruct primary and secondary vertices, and also you damage your detectors less, so also the problem of radiation damage is reduced. Now, for the upgrade, we will increase the luminosity by a factor of 5. And there are also ideas about an upgrade phase 2. Yes, here. We will have an increase of a luminosity by a very large factor, and this, so a much, much bigger pileup. And this, the idea of the second upgrade is to be able to have a flavor experiment also during the high luminosity LHC. However, to be able to do that, you really have to change the detector significantly, and you have to add timing, precise timing information to be able to, you know, to distinguish the various collisions. But okay, so, but this is far in the future, and you know, the technological solutions for this type of detector are being discussed at the moment. Yes.
Hi, Angela Boulafanas here. So you said at some point about the decay of the B meson to two muons, but we haven't seen, we have seen the one with the B strains, but not
not the B zero.
Yeah, why is that so?
Well, the B zero has a smaller branching fraction. We expect, I mean, there is almost a factor of 20 in branching fraction, which has to do with the element of the B, of the CKM matrix that enter in the diagram. And so it is more rare than the others, and therefore more difficult. Moreover, also experimentally, it will probably require a dedicated analysis because you see that there is this peaking background just underneath. No, this is the B0 to mu mu expectation. So you see that you have an expectation that is smaller than this one, but there is a peaking background, so due to B2HH, and you will have to understand the details of this peaking background, which is just under, you know, where you expect the B0 to mu mu to be able to, you know, to be sure that that what you're seeing is a real signal and not background. You see what I was saying before, this is the branching fraction of the B2 mu mu, this is 1 times 10 to the minus 10, while the other one is 4 10 to the minus 9.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Gábor Balassa from the Winger Institute, and I have a quite the general question. Maybe I can ask it right now. So what if I have a theory or some calculations and I want it to be measured? So how can one propose an experiment to, you know, measure that one?
To measure what?
Anything. I mean, if I have a theory or something.
If you have an idea, yeah, and you want to realize an experiment?
Yes.
In general?
In general, what is the way to do it?
Well,
propose such an experiment.
Well, you have to prepare. You have to prepare a proposal, and there are various steps of these proposals that you should prepare. And for example, at CERN, but similarly in other laboratories, you have bodies that are dedicated to the review of this experiment, and they will scrutinize your proposal. They will scrutinize the scientific value of your proposal. They will scrutinize also the resources that you have, how you plan to fund your experiment, which groups will participate, who will build what. And so it's a complex process that in the end will lead to either the approval or the rejection of your experiment. And then there are other considerations, because if you want to propose a small experiment, then the threshold is lower. But if you want to propose a very costly experiment, then there must be a general discussion, maybe even worldwide, because some of these projects are so costly that you will not be able to afford having two such proposals in two different places in the world. And in that case, for example, there has been recently a so-called strategy discussion led by CERN Council, to where several initiatives were encouraged from all over the world. People were encouraged to present ideas. And then people started to review, think about where should the priorities be, what should we encourage as an activity, and so forth and so on. But in general, experiments nowadays are all very costly. It's difficult to imagine a tabletop experiment that costs little, and this requires discussion and agreements among different groups. So it's a well-defined process. But if you have ideas, you're encouraged, because we need ideas.
Okay, thank you very much.
Who has a question? Okay, well, let's ask it. Pose the question.
Giovanni Malfattore is here. You showed us a resolution of about 45
femtoseconds.
Yes. I was wondering, how do you manage to have such a resolution, time or resolution? Ardorly speaking.
Well, this is what I told you already. You must have a very, well-designed detector, and a well-thought, especially, microvertex detector, which is essential for this, the precision that I'm talking about. So, in the upgrade, we are going to improve that, because we are going to pass from silicon strips to silicon pixels. And silicon pixels have advantages, because you have, you don't have to match. You directly have the space points, essentially, and this allows you to have an easier reconstruction an easier reconstruction. And more multiplicity, a bigger track, you can accept a bigger track multiplicity and still be able of distinguish tracks. A well-designed microvertex detector is essential. And the experiment was designed thinking about this type of measurement. B sub S oscillations were known to be fast, and therefore, if you want to do that type of physics, you need to have that type of performance.
Well, more than a question, it is a comment, but in the past, some years ago, quite a few years ago, in fact, there was some excitement about the possibility of lepton flavor universality breaking in Keon physics. Then the effect was supposed to be at less than 1% level, then dedicated experiment looked at it, and now we reach the precision of per mil without observing any lepton flavor universality violation in Keon physics. So this effect that you discussed seems really to be confined to the third generation. So, no, I was wondering, it seems on the other hand rather peculiar, because in B physics we made really a lot of precision tests connected to flavor change in neutral currents. Think, for instance, of B into S gamma, you know. So tests really which are quite sensitive potentially to new physics. So I was wondering, assuming really that there is a lepton flavor universality violation in BDKs, could you think of other channels, for instance, where you could test such an effect?
The channels are many, because... The
so
channels are many. Where do I have it? I have it...
you had shown...
The channels are many, because all these measurements are being done.
Which ones could be more sensitive, say?
I think that these are the ones that are more sensitive. I don't know, maybe the phi is also quite sensitive, but I think these are the ones that are more sensitive.
I see.
Because this is not very precise. But you see that here you have quite a precision.
Yeah.
So I think one has to be very prudent. So if new physics appears at the LHC, it could very well appear like that. So it is plausible that new physics appears like that, with a series of small discrepancies here and there.
Yes,
so this,
yes.
I think this is plausible. And fit to the existing B data in general, which take into account all the other precision measurements, so performed by our theoretical colleagues, find plausible solutions.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, it could be true. But it could also be that, given that the algorithms that these various processing are using, for example, for electron identification, are the same, no? One cannot exclude a common bias in these. This is my personal, maybe not to be written on the. So I think one should be prudent and before drawing conclusions, because
Bell maybe is using Bell is going to use a different algorithm.
So Bell would be a truly independent measurement, and in the case of Bell, as I was telling before, they have already measurements of the branching fractions for this B to SLL processes, where they look at electrons and muons. They have already a rather good precision, and electrons are in the same ballpark as muons. So it would be really important that they deliver results in this sector. The problem of Bell 2 is not the detector, which is very well understood. For example, they have measurement of lifetimes, lambda C lifetime, which is the most precise existing measurement. The problem is the luminosity. Their machine is complex, and they are not, and it has underperformed compared to expectations. So they are late with the luminosity that they had expected that, you know, their accelerator would deliver. I think this summer they have a long stop in which they complete the installation of their vertex detector, and they have created a task force with the participation of experts from various places to try to address this problem of high level of background that they have at their interaction region that is having a strong impact on their, you know, performance and on the luminosity.
Okay.
Yeah, that's there.
It's just a quick question. Why in this plot the gray line is not always at one? What happens at different
channels? Because there are mass effects.
Mass effects?
Mass effects. This is a theory calculated with a program which is called Flavio, and there are, I think it's mass effects. It's not the same Q square region here and there, so what is this, that difference? I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the details of the calculation. Certainly mass effects, but here is is a different Q-square region, so why the prediction is slightly different? Well, it depends. It's a different behavior as a function of Q-square. So you have the presence of the photon pole, for example, which certainly modifies the prediction. So, you know, effects like that enter in the theory calculation.
Any other questions?
If not, let us thank the speaker again.